In programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The International Atomic Energy Agency is now resuming its work to secure radioactive materials looted from stores in Iraq over fears of a severe public health risk from contamination. More from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
In the smash and grab that accompanied the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, Iraqi looters broke into complexes housing many tons of radioactive substances. They stole parts and fittings, and also some highly toxic materials because they were seen to glow in the dark. U.S. civil administrators in Baghdad say the substances are now found in local markets, where clothing manufacturers have decorated children's clothes with the radioactive paste. The International Atomic Energy Agency says its experts, now arriving in Baghdad, will estimate the extent of the problem. They'll clean up what they can and resecure those materials that remain in store. Alistair Wanklin, London.
In the first blow now to the so-called roadmap for Middle East peace, the Islamic militant group Hamas has walked away from ceasefire talks with Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. Abbas had pledged to stop terrorism as one of the first responsibilities in fostering peace for the Middle East. However, many across the region are pointing to President Bush as the final say on peace, as we hear from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
Hamas has announced it will no longer negotiate with Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas because he doesn't represent the Islamic militant group. Hamas says Mahmoud Abbas closed the door in front of the group because he committed himself in front of Mr. Bush and Mr. Sharon to what the Palestinians had refused. And yet it's the promises made to the American president that were the first sign peace was possible for the Middle East. Former Palestinian negotiator Saeb Erekat tells the Washington Post he hopes Mr. Bush will seize the moment, while top Israeli advisor Ronan Gissin adopts the American cowboy imagery, saying Mr. Bush is the only man who calls the shots, the gunman who knows how to shoot straight. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Hamas has claimed responsibility for dozens of suicide bombings targeting Israelis since the Palestinian uprising began more than 2 years ago.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Investors are reacting favorably today to a new Labor Department report showing the nation's job market may not be as weak as it was previously thought to be. Back in May, the nation's jobless rate rose to its highest level, actually, in almost a decade. The Labor Department says unemployment stood at 6.1% in May, which was up slightly from the 6% unemployment for April. However, far fewer jobs were actually cut than most analysts have been expecting. Today's report has helped send stocks soaring on Wall Street, with the S&P 500 breaking the 1,000.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
The moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
In defiance of the U.S. and Great Britain now, Moscow says it will press ahead with plans to export material for a nuclear reactor to Iran, even if Tehran doesn't agree to stricter United Nations inspections. More from correspondent Roxana Saberi.
Russia's foreign ministry spokesman says Tehran is not legally obligated to accept stricter controls over its nuclear energy program. Alexander Yakovenko says its failure to do so won't hinder its contract with Russia for a light water reactor in southern Iran. The U.S. has been leading a push for Iran to sign the additional protocol to the nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran has said it will do so only if certain sanctions against it are lifted and if it gets outside help with nuclear technology. Yakovenko also says supplies for the unfinished reactor depend on securing a separate deal with Iran to send some of the spent fuel back to Russia for reprocessing. Iran's ambassador to Russia says the bilateral deal has already been drafted and that Tehran is ready to sign. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Petri dishes, grandma's parlor, and well-used tennis shoes. All breeding grounds for yucky mold. Don't wrinkle your nose, because you've got one, too, in your car. When we come back, I'll tell you where.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Your car's heater and air conditioner provide the perfect breeding ground for smelly mold and mildew. Here's a tip to eliminate these odors. Disconnect the AC compressor before starting your car in the morning. Set the emergency brake and crank your engine. Run your AC on max and in the recirculation mode. Then spray a small can of Lysol in the passenger's foot area behind the glove compartment. Let dry 1 hour and reconnect the compressor. Voila! A car that will smell fresher all season. Now for those tennis shoes. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting on the IAmerica Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from sea to sea, broadcasting depths of outer space. Broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, from North and Central America, from Alaska to the equator, and streaming audio on the internet. For listeners in Europe to Asia, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Was American democracy created for the rich, or for the rabble, or both? A question for this hour on this Friday afternoon or Friday morning, depending on where you are. Dig into that at some length. That would be really interesting to see about our founders and who they were, what they were up to, what was going on. A couple of emails, though, first. This one I thought was really good. This is from a fellow by the name of Burr, B-U-R-R. He says, I take exception to your loose use of conservative to include both true conservatives and neocons. He says, I am an Eisenhower conservative, a true conservative who has been deserted by the Republican Party. True conservatives, as differentiated from neocons, have a lot in common with liberals. We both believe that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are absolutely essential, the sine qua non of what America is about and the basis of the success and growth of this country. We were blessed with a rich land and we have attracted the best and the brightest immigrants from the rest of the world. But we were able to do this because the Bill of Rights promised, and we have delivered to each person the freedom to make the most of his natural abilities. The neoconservatives, on the other hand, want the right, in quotes, to dictate the rules by which the rest of us must live while exempting themselves. Just look at the latest tax bill. The wealthiest 1% of Americans, who already own 67% of the wealth in the country, get an average $93,000 tax break. While the bottom 15% who are already below the poverty level, not a zilch, point, dip. Now keep in mind, this guy who's writing this represents himself as an Eisenhower conservative. He says, I'm not going to talk about whether that's just. You might think I was a liberal if I started talking about justice. I'm going to ask if this is wise. If it is worth destroying the budget surplus we had 3 years ago and leaving our grandchildren with a greatly increased national debt.
The purported reason for this tax cut is to stimulate the economy. Will it achieve that goal? And it goes on to say, if you give a tax break to a poor man, he'll spend it. He has to. Give a tax break to a rich man, he'll invest it or put it in the bank, which will invest it. See what I mean? He says, true conservatives and liberals have a lot in common, but the neoconservatives want to hog it all for themselves, and that's counterproductive. Best Burr. Thank you, Burr, for that email. That was, I thought, a very eloquent commentary. Richard writes, whatever you may want to call it, I feel a strong connection with the Revolutionary War period. We're going to get into that in just a minute. Maybe that is why I noticed that we again have an aristocrat named George. Maybe not George III, but close. He's actually the third George to be president of the United States. George Washington, George Bush first, George Bush second. Anyhow, he says he was put in office by strange means, but I think there was a purpose to it, as may be seen below. Then he goes on to say, like all other powerful cultures and empires in history, America may have reached a cliff. Going further in the same direction may soon result in a long fall. Paradoxically, this fall may be what the Earth and its environment needs. For many years, Americans, who represent 5% of the world's population, have been using a quarter of the world's resources and have been responsible for an equal amount of environmental destruction and pollution. Interesting theory that it might be a good thing if America, shudders into a Great Depression. I see the logic of it, but I... Anyway, he says, really, I'm an optimist. We may simply have to experience a little bump or two to get a new and better road. So, anyway, we've got a few others. We'll come back to them in the next hour. What I wanted to get into in this hour was America, American democracy created for the rich or for the rabble or for both? In browsing around left and right-wing websites, it's fascinating what you find. On the right-wing websites, more often than not, some depending on their perspective, whether it's libertarian or kind of neoconservative, you'll find a lot of discussion about, well, the founders really just wanted essentially anarchy. They wanted the rich to be able to do whatever they do, and the poor, if they have character defects or whatever, that's tough. And that's just life. And then there are others who suggest that there should be an elite ruling class. This is more consistent with the opinions of John Adams and Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist Party, that there should be a ruling elite in America. In fact, Alexander Hamilton at the first Constitutional Convention in 1878 got up and gave a speech in which he said, or 1787, got up and gave a speech in which he said that monarchy was actually the better form of government and that we should emulate as much as we could based on that. And, of course, Jefferson wasn't there. He was in France at the time. But Madison challenged that, as did the others who later came to be called the Democratic Republicans. So, anyhow, and then on the left-wing websites, interesting, I posted a piece on Common Dreams day before yesterday, for example, that talked about America as a democratic ideal, as an egalitarian archetype. But you'll also find people who suggest that, rather cynically in my opinion, that America really was set up of, by, and for the rich. That only white male landholders could vote in the beginning, which was true, and that was just part of some grand conspiracy to create a reinvention of empire. There's a new book out called, I just had it on the tip of my tongue. It'll come back to me. Anyhow, there's a new book out that talks about this and does a really good job of comparing the wealth of the founders with the wealth of the aristocracy in England. And it turns out that even the wealthiest of the founders, John Hancock and George Washington, were among the wealthiest men in the what we now call the United States, that their wealth was a pittance compared to even the minor nobilities of England. They didn't have these huge castles with a staff of 100 or 200 with with tens of thousands of acres of lands. In some ways, they did have a lot of land, but land didn't have the value in North America that it did in England. And the British aristocracy were just mind-bogglingly rich. And even the most wealthy of the founders would have been considered minor or lesser aristocracies compared to that, or even extreme upper middle class by today's standards. But who were the founders and what happened? This little thing here I want to share with you was written some time ago. I've seen it and heard it many times over the years. And my apologies if you have too. I suspect a lot of folks haven't, though. I wanted to share it. I'm not sure where it originated. I found this on a Department of Justice site. Whatever happened to the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence? You know, that document that said, when governments become oppressive of these needs, it is the right, it is the duty of their citizens to change that form of government. Whatever happened to those men? Five signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. Keep in mind, when these guys signed this thing, when they met in Philadelphia and signed this document that Thomas Jefferson had written and that John Adams and Ben Franklin edited, they knew that they were signing their death warrants. The very end of the document says, "To this we pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." They knew that if they were caught by the British, it was all over. And if they lost the war that they knew would ensue from signing this Declaration of Independence, they would be hanged as traitors. So five signers, a couple of folks said that our audio stream is kind of ratty today. We're going to try and renegotiate it during the break in about 4 minutes here. I'm not sure what's going on. We've got some sort of a technical problem here. But hopefully you can hear me. Five signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons serving in the Revolutionary Army. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. Here's some of the details. Carter Braxton of Virginia, a wealthy planter and trader, saw his ships swept from the seas by the British Navy. He sold his home and properties to pay his debts and died in rags. Thomas McKeem was so hounded by the British he was forced to move his family almost constantly. He served in the Congress without pay, and his family was kept in hiding. His possessions were taken from him, and he died in poverty. The homes of Dillery, Hall, Clymer, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Middleton were all looted by British soldiers and lost, all burned. At the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson, Jr. noted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the Nelson Fort. He quietly urged General George Washington to open fire on his own house. Destroyed and Nelson bankrupt with his own asset. Francis Lewis had his home and properties destroyed. The immediate wife, and she died within a few months. John Hunter, another signer of the Declaration, was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying. Their 13 children fled for their lives. His fields and his gristmill were laid to waste. For more than a year, he vanished in the forests and caves, returning home to find his wife dead and his children vanished. A few weeks later, he died from exhaustion and a broken heart. And signers Norris and Livingston suffered similar fates. Such were the stories and sacrifices of the American Revolution. These were neither wild-eyed rabble nor were they pampered aristocrats. The folks in our chat room are telling me, if you want to get to our chat room, go to the TomHartman.com site, click on to the radio show, and click on the chat room link. It'll take you to the trade forum on CompuServe. You click the chat button, and it'll drop you in. Somebody said, this stream doesn't work very well. We're going to try and fix this in just a minute. My apologies. The Midnight Ride of the Rabble is a piece I put on CompuServe yesterday, or on, I'm sorry, on commondreams.org. Here's our quote, a little bit from the poem The right of our quote for the day. To every Middlesex division, from a cry of defiance and then of fear, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will awaken and listen to hear. And hopefully what they're going to hear is the sound of liberty, of democracy, riding across the United States. Stay with the Tom Hartmann program. We'll return in just a few moments.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home?
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well,
let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is. But with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-neck geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it, Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
This
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're having some problems with the audio stream here today, and not quite sure what's up, so I'm doing the show here by telephone. Anyhow, our question, was American democracy created for the rich, or for the rabble, or for both? Our founders, I think, are pretty clear that it was really both. It was not just the rich. So what is the state of democracy in America today? What is the future of democracy? In this article I wrote for Common Dreams, I just want to go through some of the points. One of the first is that the agenda of the new conservatives, in my opinion, is nothing less than the destruction of democracy in the United States of America. And feudalism is one of their weapons. Historically, the United States has been ruled, or historically, civilizations were ruled by three powers, three types of tyrants, three historic tyrants. And those three historic tyrants were kings, theocrats, and noble lords, the nobility, the feudal lords. And we explicitly said, we don't want any more kings here. In fact, Abraham Lincoln in 1848, he said in a letter to William Herndon, kings had always been involved in impoverishing their people in wars, pretending generally, if not always, that the good of the people was the object. This, our Constitutional Convention understood to be the most oppressive of all kingly oppressions, and they resolved to so frame the Constitution that no man should hold the power of bringing this oppression upon us. So he said no to kings. No, we don't want them. We're not going to have them. And what about theocrats, the rule by the religious powers? In 1784, the very new nation, in fact, this was even before the United States Constitution had been ratified, Patrick Henry was a member of the Virginia legislature, and he introduced a bill into the Virginia legislature suggesting that faith-based education systems, Christian schools, should be paid for with a sort of voucher system where citizens could get revenue, could get a voucher essentially for money from the government and use that to pay for what he called Christian education. And James Madison replied saying, this will be a dangerous abuse of power. And he went on, the rulers who are guilty of such an encroachment, that is an encroachment into the realm of government by religion, or into the realm of religion by government. He said, the rulers who are guilty of such an encroachment exceed the commission from which they derive their authority and are tyrants. The people who submit to it are governed by laws made neither by themselves nor by any authority derived from them and are slaves. So we were quite clear we did not want to have theocracies. We didn't want to go back to the Salem communities, to the theocratic communities. And America wasn't a feudal state. Ralph Waldo Emerson, back in 1873, he wrote, we began with freedom. America was opened after the feudal mischief of Europe was spent. But the neoconservatives, the new conservatives, and I think it's important to call them the new conservatives because these are not people that Teddy Roosevelt or Dwight Eisenhower would recognize. This is a whole different breed. They don't follow the dictates and doctrines and ideals of classical conservatism. The idea that it's important to conserve, to protect the environment, to have a balanced budget. You know, the classic aspects of conservatism. Instead, they're trying to create a new feudalism, a neo-feudalism. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Members of the Graphics Communications International Union and Unite came together for a joint rally outside a convention at the Moscone Center in downtown San Francisco yesterday. Inside, the world's largest commercial printer, Quebecor World, was presenting an award to Cintas, a Cincinnati-based laundry and uniform company.
Quebecor says that everybody in America touches a Quebecor product once a day. We think it's time that everybody in America hears how Quebecor is treating workers.
Jennifer Love of the AFL-CIO says that Quebecor World often refuses to bargain with its unions.
This is a great moment when one anti-union company is rewarding another. Quebecor World is sponsoring a luncheon at the annual catalog conference, which is honoring catalogs, one of which is produced by Cintas Corporation.
With its 17,000 production workers at more than 300 plants, Cintas is the largest provider of uniform rentals in the nation. And according to Leah Rothstein of Unite in Northern California, it's also among the most anti-worker.
They spend tons of money fighting unions. They hire consultants. They intimidate. They fire. They threaten their workers to stop them from unionizing.
Both unions say they'll keep up the pressure until both companies change their ways.
British resistance to a proposed European Union Charter of Labor Rights is gaining strength. The Confederation of British Industry, one of the country's largest business lobbies, says a provision in the charter requires that all temporary workers be afforded the same pay and benefits after 6 weeks on a job. Speaking for its members, who employ more than 6 million British workers, the CBI says such a right would lead to hiring freezes and job cuts, as it would take the value out of short-term employment. Last week, the British government announced it would block the implementation of an EU Bill of Labor Rights if the rights of workers to organize and strike were not deleted from the charter.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk! Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt.
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on.
Tired of talk radio sounding like a propaganda arm of the Republican Party? Well, so am I. This is Peter Werbe, and I've moved my program to 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time weekdays. Join me as I expose the Grand Oil Party's plans to pay off their corporate paymasters by making this country a permanent warfare state while destroying the environment and attacking the rights of women and working people in the process. So tune by the show, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and join me, Peter Werbe, as we make plans to take back our country.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of they the transnational corporations. Some interesting stuff we're going to get to a little later in the program. Tom DeLay looks like he's in a little bit of a trouble, a possible bribery scandal brewing. Speaking of we, the transnational corporations, or they, the midnight ride of the rabble. What was American democracy created for the rich or for the rabble or for both? The rabble is a phrase that John Adams used. John Adams considered himself one of the aristocracy by virtue of education. And if you have only read the biographies of John Adams written by the Republican historians, the ones that are on the bestseller lists right now, where if you go to these guys' websites, you'll find pictures of them arm-in-arm with George Bush. You probably don't know about things like the Alien and Sedition Acts, about John and Abigail Adams arguing loudly that anybody who criticized them should be thrown in jail, and in fact then doing it. We'll get to that in a little while. Interesting, the history of the United States. And the more you get into it, the more it seems like what goes around comes around. We were talking about, and if you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. It's a Friday. If there's another topic you want to talk about, for that matter, feel free to bring it up or anything on your mind. I would be pleased to hear about it. And we can explore other directions if you'd like for a little while. And you'll get to be on the air with the same audio quality that I have right now. I'm dialing in by telephone to the studios in Detroit of IE America Radio because our digital audio stream has croaked. And also, if you'd like to record a message for the show, call our TalkBack hotline at 1-800-397-8255. But the number, if you'd like to be on the program today, is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Corporations, the new conservatives say, are more suited to governance than are the unpredictable rabble that we call citizens. Corporation, we have CEOs now in charge of our government for the first time in the history of the United States. We have CEOs feeding legislation to Congress. It is almost impossible now for legislation to make its way through Congress without there being something attached to it by a corporate interest. Have any of your interests been attached to legislation? Good question. I think if you or I were to call somebody in Congress and say, you know, I'd like you to put this onto a piece of legislation, if you could even get through. We'll get into that a little more with our Tom Delay alert later on in the program. Corporations should have the right to privacy. They should have Fourth Amendment privacy rights under the Constitution. They should have the right of free speech, which includes the First Amendment right to lie. If you can say to somebody, hey, you look great in that, or no, you don't look fat, then a corporation should have the right to say, no, we don't have sweatshop labor, when in fact they do. We see Nike just last month took this to the Supreme Court. Says they should have the right to deceive. The consumer protection laws that require corporations to speak truthfully in their public relations and advertising in the state of California should be set aside. Because even though the Bill of Rights was explicitly and overtly written for human beings, for you and me, it doesn't apply just to us. It applies to corporations as well. Dave in Silverdale, Washington.
Tom, great topic today. It always gets my blood going when we talk about the corporatization of the our democracy. And, you know, it amazes me when I talk to people who I guess just have this blind trust in the corporate world, and, you know, not surprisingly, since corporate owns the media, we've been led to believe, you know, you go in corporations, and I've worked for two.
I'm sorry, Dave. Boy, today is a Murphy's Law day, and, got a wire here that's loose, and I couldn't hear you on the phone. So can you repeat your comment? I'm sorry. Oh, we lost him. Boy, we lost Dave. You lost me. Oh, well. Dave, please call back. 1-800-825-5937. I would like to know what you had to say, and I would like to comment on it. I'm sorry. This is just a comedy of errors here. It's odd. We've been on the air for a couple of months, and we've never had anything like this happen. It must be that, you know, Mercury's not retrograde right now, but it must be one of those planetary alignment things. Or I know I sent an email to to Michael Harrison of Talkers Magazine today and said, you ought to listen to the show today. It's going to be a good show. That's why this is going on. So if Michael is listening, hey, Michael. Anyway, corporations, should they have the rights of persons? Should they control the, quote, free marketplace? Should corporations control our schools? Should they have the power? You know, the No Child Left Behind Act, I think, is a marvelous example of this. This is basically a giveaway to large corporate testing companies. Nothing more. Just a giveaway to testing companies. The Jim Jeffords quit the Republican Party over this. And he sent me a copy of a congressional report that was not available to the public that just laid this out. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, our number. And Dave is back. Dave, fire away again, please.
Hey, Tom. The man knocked us off the line.
Oh, okay.
You know, Tom, I love this topic, and you've talked, you know, around a similar vein recently, and I think it's so important to people to realize that, you know, even though these corporations, many of them are public companies, we have no say. If we're going to allow them to make the rules of our society and texture our life, the problem being it's not representative. I have no say who sits on the board of, you know, any of these corporations, and therefore I lose my representation.
I agree. Corporations are not democratic institutions. You know, there are the pro-corporate folks out there who are running around going, oh, corporations are just little democracies. The stockholders get to vote, and then the directors have to do the will of the stockholders. Wrong. The stockholders have, in theory, the right to vote, but the board of directors of most corporations does not have an obligation to do what the stockholders vote.
Well, and the democracy that exists in these corporations is a democracy that George Bush could only love, because lots of times if you get a vote for a board member, you're basically told who to vote for.
Right.
You're told what's going to be on the ballot. It is absolutely not representative. And I think that people need to, and, you know, I the timing's perfect, because if you look at this thing, I think the Washington Post is running it on Tom DeLay, selling votes. You know, are selling power and influence, and I think that people, you know, maybe it's my sensitivities because I've read Jefferson and Rousseau, and I have a sense that I don't want to be one of those slaves.
Right.
I want a say in my own destiny.
There you go.
And I won't have it as long as corporations are running this country.
Yeah, I agree. Was American democracy created for the rich or for the rabble or both? Dave, what do you think?
I think it was created to protect us from each other, in a sense, and to make sure that each side had a say. I mean, I know Madison seemed to be concerned about protecting property owners from the rabble. I think that people like Jefferson were more interested in protecting rabble from the property owners.
Yeah, and that's the dynamic tension, although I'd say actually it was Adams who was more interested in protecting, Adams and Hamilton, who were interested in protecting the property owners from the rabble. That was the Federalist agenda. And the Democratic Republicans, who now, it's just incredible. If you go to the WhiteHouse.gov website and look at the official biography of Thomas Jefferson, the White House has reinvented him as a Republican. And he was the founder of the Democratic Party. They call themselves the Democratic Republicans, and the White House has managed to drop the word Democratic off that description. So it's, wow. But anyway, the position of Madison and Jefferson, by and large, was defending both. And Madison, in Federalist Number 10, Number 10 of the Federalist Papers, wrote just a brilliant piece about the need to balance the two. Dave, thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you, Tom.
I appreciate you calling in. Dave in Silverdale, Washington, thank you. Jeff in Denver has some comments on this topic. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Hi, Tom. You keep on, of course, yeah, recommending reading the papers of the founding.
Can you say that again, Jeff? You're a little...
Okay, you keep on recommending the papers of the founder, such as the Common Sense and Federalist Papers.
Right.
What are the more obscure readings that you would recommend besides the Constitution and such, so we can really understand how this country is founded?
You mean the older writings?
Particularly those, but possibly new ones that might give perspective on them, too.
Yeah, well, in the realm of new stuff, either Ronald or Richard Dahl has a new book out called How Democratic is the American Constitution?
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous book. I wrote a book called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
It would be nice of you to have a list on your site, because you're always talking about these things, and a lot of us are just really, really, really hungry to find out really what the intentions were.
That's a good suggestion. That's a really good suggestion.
One book that I would love to suggest to everybody is Jacob Needleman's recent book on the American soul.
Yes, I read that about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
The Soul of America, isn't that what he calls it?
Yeah, unfortunately I have it in front of me, but yes. And it's one of those ones that it's every paragraph gets underlined. It's like you want to underline 100% of the book.
Yeah.
It's called The American Soul, Rediscovering the Wisdom of the Founders.
Yeah, I thought that it was a brilliant book. My small disappointment with it, and this is, you know, on a scale of 0 to 100, it's a 90 or a 95, was that he didn't so much quote from original sources as he paraphrased and interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And
agreed.
I'm just a junkie for the original sources, and for enough of them that I know that I'm not reading something taken out of context. When I wrote on Equal Protection, I quoted liberally from the founders, and I found this wonderful book that was published in 1820s by George Robert Twelvetree Hughes, who was one of the 150 men who participated in the Boston Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all sworn an absolute oath of silence. And so we don't have any records from any of the participants. In fact, we don't even know who most of the participants were. We know Sam Adams was there, and we know George Hughes was there, and that's it. And Hughes wrote this retrospective that was self-published in New York, in Oswego, New York, and then went out of print about 1830. And I found an old copy in an antiquarian bookstore. And it's incredible, because three-quarters of the book is a rant against corporate power. That, you know, he talks about that they were, you know, they were angry at the British in large part because the British was supporting the East India Company, which was sucking out the marrow of the bones of the Americans. They were creating monopoly in the United States. It's one of the reasons why Jefferson proposed an amendment to the Constitution to bar monopolies in commerce. And so I borrowed heavily from that and put it in the book Needleman's book is good. Dahl's book is good. This other book that I'm trying to remember the name of that I just read a couple of weeks ago. It's got one of those kind of ephemeral names like To Live Again or To Bring Democracy Back or something like that. I'll have to bring it downstairs tomorrow and have it on the air. But yeah, we'll put
yeah, please
some books
keep on
our
feeding
website.
Us.
That's an excellent idea.
Okay,
thank you, Jeff.
Bye.
I appreciate the comment. Thanks for the call. Corporations suited to governments. Here's the key to this whole thing, and that is that nature abhors a vacuum. You know, this basic law of physics that if you've got an empty space, something will fill it. And that's also true when it comes to governance and politics. So we've got this situation in America where we have this enormous commons. I mean, we are one of the largest, physically largest nations in the world. We're just a little bit smaller than Russia and China, but we're huge. We're about the same size as Australia, but we have much more usable land. And this land itself represents a commons. We have this huge national park system. We have massive infrastructure, highways and roads. We have the air of America, the transportation system of America. The skyways are regulated by the Federal Aviation Administration and paid for with our tax dollars, subsidized, although we can't seem to get it together to subsidize Amtrak. We do it with the skies. And the commons of our educational system, what was up until the last few decades, up until basically the Reagan era, the commons of health care. Hospitals had to be nonprofit up until Ronald Reagan came along. And then when they started changing those laws so that hospitals could become for-profit, that's how Bill Frist made his millions. He was buying up nonprofit hospitals at fire sale prices, turning them into for-profit institutions, racking up the prices, and boom, multimillionaires were created. I mean, healthcare, and that's when healthcare costs started just exploding. was when those regulations were taken out of place. So what happens is, because nature abhors a vacuum, and in politics it's very much the case as well, that something comes in to fill that vacuum. So when a democratic government, we the people, step out of the role of administering our commons, somebody will step in, and that somebody, over and over and over, has been demonstrated to be corporate powers. And we have now an administration that is committed to this, as this letter that I read to you from this Eisenhower Republican so eloquently stated, that the new conservative agenda seems to be one of, let's turn it all over to corporations. Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged saw an America going down the tubes. It was nothing like what we have now. I want to come back to that as we close up this hour. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline, how can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Hi, this is Peter Werby from the IE America Radio Network, wondering whether you've heard about In These Times magazine. A bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. Find out what you're missing. Visit them online at www.inthesetimes.com or call them toll-free at 1-800-827-0270.
Xixi is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fan ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fan ji la.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Yeah.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Was American democracy created for the rich or for the rabble or for both? The rabble being John Adams' phrase that he used to describe we the people. I think both. I'm convinced that it's both. We have this this broad overview now. In our chat room, a couple of folks have offered some great suggestions. Rousseau's The Social Contract, which I admit I have not read all the way through, and I had to dig into 30 years ago in school, and I don't remember much about. I found particularly interesting, we're back to Dave's question, or Jeff's question from Denver, who had asked, what's good reading? Alexis de Tocqueville, back in 1832, as I recall, perhaps it was 1834, the United States was only 30, 40 years old. The French Revolution was only 30 or so years old. And he was a French sort of pseudo-aristocrat. He came over to the United States and spent 6 months traveling around the country asking the question of everybody everywhere, is American democracy something that will survive? Is this just some noble experiment that is doomed to fail, or is this really and truly a form of governance that can survive? And he compiled his observations, and some of them are very astute, into a book called Democracy in America, which is still in print. And it was the best-selling book between the years of 1800 and 1850. It was the best-selling book in America. It wasn't replaced until the 1850s by Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe. And that's a remarkable book. There's a chapter toward the end of the book, what sort of despotism democracies have to fear, that I found fascinating. It's as if this guy looked into a time machine or stepped into a time machine and saw our land today. And he talks about the danger of media monopolies and the danger of the press being seized by the forces that would seek to anesthetize the public. It's just an amazing and startling indictment of that situation, or warning of what could happen. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats at Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge today is admitting the nation's current system of assessing the threat level of terrorist attacks may not make much sense to most Americans. Correspondent Priscilla Huff has more on the system's problems.
The mayor of New Haven, Connecticut worries people are not going to take these alerts very seriously. U.S. Secretary for Homeland Security Tom Ridge admits he's worried about the credibility of the system and that terrorists may even be gaming the system, that is, increasing their chatter to fool intelligence analysts. Ridge does say it takes a great deal of information for U.S. officials to raise the alert level from yellow to orange or even red, but he thinks it needs to be supplemented with targeted information, something that's been lacking in recent intelligence. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Ridge admitted the terror threat advisory system is in need of some refinements. He says the system could be losing credibility because of what he calls the, quote, fairly generic nature of intelligence gathering. He says the government's now working with states and the private sector to better refine the warning system. The legal jousting moves into high gear today in the Scott Peterson murder case. Reported John Andrews has the latest from outside the courthouse in Modesto, California.
The preliminary hearing in the Scott Peterson double murder trial isn't scheduled until mid-July, but today several issues related to the case will be discussed and perhaps decided. Among the items on the agenda, will a gag order be imposed? Will the warrants and autopsies be kept under court seal? And whether or not recordings of wiretap phone conversations between Peterson and his lawyers will result in sanctions against the prosecution. Don Andrews, Modesto.
A Palestinian militant group says it's now ending talks with the Palestinian prime minister aimed at ending attacks against Israelis. A Hamas leader says Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas made unacceptable commitments at a landmark summit recently aimed at implementing the so-called U.S. roadmap for Middle East peace. Hamas has claimed responsibility for dozens of suicide bombings targeting Israelis since the Palestinian uprising began more than 2 years ago. Abbas had been holding truce talks with Hamas and expressed confidence he could reach a ceasefire agreement soon.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
The nation's jobless rate is now at its highest level in almost 9 years. The Labor Department says unemployment was 6.1% in May, up slightly from 6% in April. But employers actually only cut 17,000 jobs from their payrolls in May, far fewer than the predicted 39,000 cuts. The Senate has now voted to expand the increase in the child tax credit to lower-income Americans. Those families were included in the original version of the $350 billion tax cut package recently signed by the president. The provision, however, was dropped in the final version of the bill as lawmakers scrambled to keep the cost down.
Mom, what's wrong?
My knees are killing me. I shouldn't have jogged this morning.
Today's my party. You gonna be okay?
I should be. The party's hours away.
And we have tons to do.
the moment of choice, Tylenol or Advil. Which works better to get you through the day? Truth is, Advil can give you longer-lasting relief, better relief than Tylenol for tough muscle aches and pain. And Advil is gentle on your stomach.
Mom, you look like you're having fun.
I really am.
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Voters in Poland will tell their government this weekend if they believe the former communist bloc state should join the European Union. More from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
Surveys show 7 in 10 poll voters favor joining the European Union. Some say they see membership as an important step in throwing off the isolation of Poland's past membership of the communist bloc. But some farmers fear their meat, cereals and vegetables will be uncompetitive against heavily subsidized West European produce. And some voters say, too, they worry about handing sovereignty to a central European authority so soon after Poland gained its independence. Alistair Wanklin reporting.
And bleak news today about the state of the world's poor. About half the world's population now lives in poverty with incomes of less than $2 a day. That's according to the United Nations International Labor Organization, which says 1 billion people actually survive on only a dollar a day. In its report being released next week, the ILO will show official unemployment at its highest point ever and still growing with about 180 million people out of work worldwide. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Does your car sound like the Clydesdales in Fast Forward? The problem could be unhealthy joints. No, not the horses, your cars. When we come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first, until we tested 6 Tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today, or visit TornadoAir.com. That clacking could be a sign of old age in your car's CV or constant velocity joints. These flexible joints allow drive shafts and axles to steer cars smoothly. But if they don't function properly, axles could freeze up or even fall off. How do you recognize faulty CV joints? Hopping and clicking when turning and clunking when accelerating are classic signs. And if you can create these noises by putting your car in reverse and backing in a circle, your CV joints are really aching. So communicate these symptoms to your technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE American Radio Network. Broadcasting coast-to-coast on terrestrial radio stations on the Sirius satellite from the depths of outer space all across North and Central America, and streaming on the Internet from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. The Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. We are going to start out off our hour here with a conservative alert. What are they up to now? Tom DeLay, former exterminator. Did you know that? This guy was a bug killer who got upset with the fact that the government was restricting which chemicals he could use, which poisons he could put in people's houses, and therefore ran for Congress. Tom DeLay, according to Westar Energy Incorporated internal documents, Tom DeLay, Representative Joe Barton, Representative Billy Towson, and Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama, in exchange for a $56,500 donation to various campaign committees, put in an exemption that Westar Energy was seeking to a law that regulated the energy industry into some legislation. Here, $56,500. The exemption that Westar sought was inserted into the legislation by Barton. There was a series of emails that have been found. The Kansas City Star first reported on the details of these Westar emails, and as a result, apparently, the officials involved have resigned, taken leave, or been fired. But here's what some of the emails said. This is an email sent to Douglas T. Lake, an executive vice president. It said, quote, "We are working on getting our grandfather provision on PUHCA repeal into the Senate version of the energy bill. It requires working with the conference committee. We have a plan for participation to get a seat at the table, which has been approved by David. The total of the package will be $31,500 in hard money and $25,000 in soft money." And another email says, "Right now we have $11,500 in immediate needs for a group of candidates associated with Tom DeLay, Billy Towson, Joe Barton, and Senator Richard Shelby." The email went on to say it is DeLay's, quote, "agreement is necessary before the House conferees can push the language that we have placed in the House bill," end quote. So it sounds like DeLay is saying, well, I'll consider it after you give us the money. Towson and Barton, quote, "are key House conferees on our legislation. They have made this request for contributions to other Republican candidates," quote, "in lieu of contributions made to their own campaigns," end quote. This from today's Washington Post. Firm saw a link in favor and donation. DeLay met with Westar representatives last year. The Westar amendment, he said, meshed with DeLay's long-held free market deregulatory philosophy, and therefore it wasn't a bribe. It was just guys doing stuff they all believe in. It's interesting. If you go back to 1999, just a few years ago, this is a Houston Press article from January 7th, 1999 edition. This is the state where DeLay is from. He's the congressman from Texas. He and Dan Quayle, DeLay explained to the assembled media in New Orleans. See, somebody had asked him, how come he didn't serve in Vietnam? And he says that him and Dan Quayle were victims of an unusual phenomena back in the days of the undeclared Southeast Asian War. So many minority youths had volunteered for the well-paying military positions to escape poverty in the ghetto that there was literally no room for patriotic folks like himself. I seem to remember a draft, but apparently DeLay doesn't. Tom DeLay, who has called the Nobel Prize Committee the Swedish environmental extremists, has called the EPA the Gestapo, and has said he does not believe in global warming. There was a company that was accused of having slave labor on an island out in the Pacific, Saipan. So they put together a deal, and they said, Clinton administration actually was trying to shut this thing down. Clinton administration sought to yank Saipan's factories into the 20th century in 1994, requiring that workers be paid a minimum wage, overtime, and have their living conditions improved. The island government hired a platoon of well-connected lobbyists, headed by DeLay's former aide, Jack Abramoff, who contributed $18,000 to DeLay's campaign coffers. So far, this island has paid the firm of Preston Gates Ellis and Rovalis Meads $4 million for their efforts. And they treated Tom DeLay and Dick Armey to trips to the island, where they played golf, snorkeled, made whirlwind visits to factories, especially spiffed up for the occasion. DeLay says to a banquet on the island, "Even though I've only been here for 24 hours, I have witnessed the miracle of economic success on the Marianas." Yin, a woman who works there, entered the world of 18-hour workdays and payless paydays. Her wages shrunk to almost nothing after her employer deducted charges for room, board, and transportation. Those rare times she wasn't at the factory, she lived in a tiny room shared with 15 other women in a barracks guarded by men and surrounded by a barbed wire fence. She had no option of quitting. Tied to specific employers, Saipan's guest workers don't have the liberty to shop around for another job. Tom DeLay was so taken with this way of doing business, he suggested that the United States institute a similar
quote, guest worker, end quote, program, quote, where particular companies can bring Mexican workers in to fill jobs that Americans won't take, paid at whatever wage the market will bear, end quote. And when he went to see these workers in the Malvinas, these 18-hour-a-day working people, he said, I don't see anyone sweating, DeLay said reportedly with a laugh. Well, it appears, from what the Washington Post says, that perhaps now Tom DeLay is sweating. Our conservative alert for the day. So, was democracy... Well, what's the story with democracy here? What is the state of democracy? Let's look into this thing here. I'd like to read to you a little... I generally don't like to read a lot, but this is amazing. Just guess where this came from. I've talked before about how things seem to go in cycles, these 80-year cycles of economic disaster, for example. The 1920s, roughly 80 years ago, the late 1920s, then the Great Depression, and then there was the financial panic of the 1850s, the 1856, that some say led to the Civil War. There was the worldwide recession of the 1770s that some say led to the East India Company's activities in 1773 that led to the Boston Tea Party, that led to the American Revolution. There was the Great Panic of the 1690s through 1700. Every 80 years, it seems. Are there other cycles that seem to kind of follow these things or precede them? This is the preamble to a platform for a major American political party. And I quote, "The people are demoralized. The newspapers are largely subsidized or muzzled, public opinion silenced, small businesses prostrated, homes covered with mortgages, labor impoverished, and the land concentrating in the hands of capitalists. The urban workmen are denied the right to organize for self-protection. Imported, pauperized labor beats down their wages. The fruits of the toil of millions are badly stolen to build up colossal fortunes for a few, unprecedented in the history of mankind. And the possessors of these fortunes in turn despise the republic and endanger liberty. From the same prolific womb of governmental injustice, we breed the two great classes, tramps and millionaires. A vast public debt has been funded, adding millions to the burdens of the people." And they summarize saying, "A vast conspiracy against mankind has been organized on two continents and is rapidly taking possession of the world. We believe that the power of government, in other words, of the people, should be expanded as rapidly and as far as the good sense of an intelligent people and the teaching of experience shall justify to end that oppression, injustice, and poverty." This was 1892, and it was the platform of the Populist Party. We owe to the Populist Party two major changes in the United States. The first, and these were parts of their platform, and here are some of the planks of their platform, actually. This is really interesting. "Resolve that we demand a free ballot and a fair count in all elections and pledge ourselves to secure it to every legal voter through the adoption by the states of the unperverted Australian system," which was a secret ballot. Now Australia is ahead of us again, by the way. They have something similar to what we call instant runoff voting, so that multiple parties can participate in politics rather than just a two-party system like we have in the United States. "Resolve that we pledge our support to fair and liberal pensions to soldiers and sailors. Resolve that we cordially sympathize with the efforts of organized working men to shorten the hours of labor and demand a rigid enforcement of the existing 8-hour law on government work and ask that a penalty clause be added to the said law. Resolve that we commend to the favorable consideration of the people and the reform press the legislative system known as the initiative and referendum." Boy, that's going to be a tough one. A lot of states have this. This is where individual citizens can propose legislation. If they get enough signatures, it gets on the ballot. If it gets voted in, it's the law. At the federal level, this has been fought back ever since 1776. "And resolve that we oppose any subsidy or national aid to any private corporation for any purpose." Well, they also proposed that the Senate should be directly elected. And as I recall, that passed in 1916. Up until that time, the Senate was actually selected by the states. The governors or the legislatures of the states would select who their two senators would be, and then the representatives in Congress, House of Representatives, were directly elected. They said, well, we should directly elect the Senate, too. The Populist Party got that passed. And the other thing that they pushed for was the beginning of a graduated income tax, a progressive income tax. And they got that passed. So, you know, kind of what goes around comes around. And in that realm, we find now that the Democrats have formed a new think tank. John Podesta, former chief of staff in the Clinton White House, seems to be the guy who's going to head this up. But rather than just saying this is how the Democrats should be, which is how most of the think tanks in the past have been, he says we want to take on the right rather than try to make this an argument about whether the Democratic Party should go left or center. More like the Heritage Foundation and less like the Public Policy Institute. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay with us. I'll be right back.
Attention all plaintiffs. If personal injury, medical malpractice, accident, or other disaster has left you helpless and desperate, call now 800-586-5493 and receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Express lawsuit funding provides no risk, no payments needed cash to people with pending lawsuits. The money is yours until your case settles. You pay nothing. We only collect when your lawsuit settles. Call us now. 800-586-5493. Your lawsuit has merit, and the cash is yours to do with whatever you need. Take care of living expenses, credit cards, car payments. No payments needed until your case settles. No employment requirements. No credit checks. Call now. 800-586-5493. Your cash is waiting for your call. Express Lawsuit Funding is waiting to help you. Call 800-586-5493.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
If you're among the millions of workers and shareholders who are sick of seeing your companies crash while the pampered CEOs who caused the wreck skip gaily away with tens of millions of dollars in lavish pay packages, you might want to look to England for hope. There's been a long simmering political debate across the pond about the unseemly self-enrichment of their corporate chieftains. Even though CEO pay there still is a fraction of the sums paid to corporate royalty here in America. But some British wannabes have been steadily pushing to bring buccaneering off-the-charts U.S.-style pay levels to England. For example, the aptly named Sir Christopher Hogg, chairman of the global drug giant GlaxoSmithKline, claims that British pay levels must become competitive with the king's ransoms paid to American CEOs. Hogwash, shout England's shareholder and worker groups, who've seen the destructive results in America when the fortunes of top executives are separated from the well-being of everyone else. These egalitarian forces have been fighting the Sir Hogs and winning. In January, a new law passed requiring large British corporations to, one, disclose details of pay packages, and, two, put them to a vote by shareholders. The law is working. In May, shareholders and union pensioners gave Sir Hogg's own corporation a comeuppance, voting down the proposed deal for Glaxo's CEO, who would have gotten a special $24 million payout even if he had bankrupted the company.
Now, to avoid similar public humiliation, honchos at the retailing giant Kingfisher are scaling down their extravagant deals prior to facing shareholders at their upcoming meeting. This is Jim Hightower saying, the rebellion is on! And not only are the Brits storming the barricades of CEO power, but it's happening here, too. To help foster the rebellion among American shareholders, call United for a Fair Economy, 617-423-2148.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. Welcome back, sans bumper music, to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Whoop. Got something. I don't think it's the right one. If you'd like to be on the program today, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. That's okay. 1-800-825-5937. 1-800-TALK-YES to be on the Tom Hartman Program. You have some comments about the state of democracy. I had said a couple of days ago that the a couple of things. I just want to catch up on here. One has to do with Paul Wolfowitz. We talked yesterday about this report that was in the Guardian of England. And when something is wrong, I think it's really important to set it straight, even if it's about somebody who I don't hold in the highest of esteem. I don't know Paul Wolfowitz, so I can't speak to him. But anyway, the Guardian in London had quoted Der Spiegel, as I recall, or one of the Die Welt, one of the German newspapers, in saying that in Singapore, Paul Wolfowitz said that we only went to war because we wanted to get oil. The quote from that paper had been, let's look at it simply. The most important difference between North Korea and Iraq is that economically we had no choice in Iraq. The country swims on a sea of oil. Here's what he actually said, according to the Pentagon. And assuming that this is what he actually said, he actually makes sense here. And so I think it's worth sharing with you so that we're all well-informed and properly informed. He said, when somebody had asked him about why don't we attack North Korea like we did Iraq, he said, look, the primary difference, to put it a little too simply, between North Korea and Iraq is that we had virtually no economic options with Iraq because the country floats on a sea of oil. In the case of North Korea, the country is teetering on the edge of economic collapse, and that, I believe, is a major point of leverage. Whereas the military picture with North Korea is very different from that with Iraq. The problems in both cases have some similarities, but the solutions have got to be tailored to the circumstances, which are very different. And that, actually, I think, is a very wise comment. So we owe an apology to Paul Wolfowitz, or I guess the Guardian does, and in fact they did apologize today. So back to the Populist Party. Oh, this is another one. We had talked yesterday or the day before about how the United States Senate, and this is, I'd really like to know your thoughts on this. 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937, if you feel strongly about this. Maybe this is something that just kind of, you know, doesn't much matter. But the Republicans had exempted basically the lower middle class and poor people, economically lower middle class and poor people, from the child tax credit, these $400 checks that they're mailing out to everybody. And the Democrats then came in and said, whoa, how can you do that? You're terrible, you're heartless, we have to give this tax credit to these people. And in my opinion, this was a huge mistake for two reasons. For a strategic reason and for a reason that has to do with the future survival of democracy in America. The strategic reason is that all of a sudden the Democrats have to be singing the tune of the Republicans, saying that the tax cuts are good and therefore we're going to extend them. And in fact, Tom Daschle, and I don't know where this guy's brain is. Maybe I should play the If He Only Had a Brain song for him too. He said, now they just passed this legislation that I'm going to get to in just a second telling you about this. And to extend this tax cut, or to extend the refund checks, And in many cases, these are people who didn't pay income tax in the first place, although they do pay payroll taxes and sales tax and property tax, all kinds of other taxes, certainly payroll taxes. These are people who work for a living and are filing tax returns with the IRS. Tom Daschle says, the strong bipartisan action to correct this unjust and deliberate omission. He said, the Senate today is acting today with strong bipartisan action to correct this unjust and deliberate omission. Now these hardworking taxpaying families will get their fair share of tax relief. Now all of a sudden Tom Daschle is saying tax relief. And this isn't tax relief. This is bankrupting the government. We'll wrap this up on the other side of this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Two foreign fish and one foreign mollusk create a trio of trouble in the Great Lakes. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The Great Lakes have become home to three species of aquatic organisms that are native to the region around the Caspian Sea between Europe and Asia. Two of them are fish and one is a mollusk. Researchers say each one of them poses a problem on its own, and taken together, they've become a troublesome trio. Martin Berg is a biologist at Loyola University in Chicago. Berg and his colleagues recently completed a 6-year study on invasive species in the Great Lakes. Berg says some popular fish, especially young yellow perch, are being badly hurt by the newcomers. One of the invaders is a mollusk named the zebra mussel. The other two are fish. One of them is the round goby. The other is the Eurasian ruff.
The main concern is that both round gobies and Eurasian ruff feed on the same types of organisms when they're young that young yellow perch feed on, which are small invertebrates that live on the bottom. So that's our concern with yellow perch, but really any native fish that is associated with the bottom could be affected by both ruff and gobies.
The gobies eat zebra mussels, and that creates complications with toxic chemicals in the food chain. Zebra mussels eat by filtering organic material out of the water. In the process, they absorb a lot of contaminants, like PCBs. Berg says the PCBs get into the tissue of gobies that eat the zebra mussels, and then the contaminants are absorbed by larger sport fish that eat the gobies.
In essence, what you have is a conduit, if you will, of PCBs moving up through the food web as a result of exotic species.
Zebra mussels, round gobies, and Eurasian ruff entered the Great Lakes in the late 1980s and early 1990s, most likely as hitchhikers in the ballast water of foreign ships. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our question today, what is the state of democracy? So we were talking about the expanding the child tax credit that was in today's newspaper. What had happened was the Democrats said, oh, you nasty Republicans, you didn't give this tax cut to all of these poor and middle-income people. And so the Republicans came back and said, okay, tell you what. Right now, the only people who get the tax cut are those who make more than $20,000, $22,800 more or less, and less than $110,000. So let's expand that this is just for the specific child tax credit, this one little piece of this tax cut legislation. So let's take that $110,000 top bracket and extend it up to $150,000. So we can cut these checks for thousands of more families, millions of, I don't know how many, lots of more families, people who make between $110,000 and $150,000 a year. And if you'll do that, then we'll extend it to people who make less than $22,800 a year. And the Democrats said, okay, cool, we'll do that. And there were, as I recall, there were only four votes against this yesterday. Yeah, it passed 94 to 2. Only two votes against it, the two GOP senators from Oklahoma. And my thought is that this was a surrender of principle. That if the Democrats really wanted to stand up for a principle, the principle being that government should pay its own way, and that tax cuts of this type are not the way to be doing this. I mean, that they should have simply said to folks, hey, you know, we put this thing in the original legislation, which they did. The Republicans took it out, which they did. And that's the breaks. And let the Republicans deal with the political fallout of it. Now the Republicans are going to be able to take credit. I guarantee you, probably like with the last tax cut checks that were mailed out in 2001 from George Bush's first tax cut, I remember when I got my check, what was it, $300 or something like that? Maybe it was $600 for both Louise and I. We got this check, and there was a letter along with it, or some little postcard thing that said, you know, compliments of George Bush, essentially. That when those checks go out to those people, the Republicans are going to take credit for it. Nobody's going to remember that Democrats had anything to do with this. They think that they're getting some political gain. And it's adding $80 billion more to the national deficit and to the national debt. This would have been $3 billion if it had just been checks to these low-income and lower-middle-income folks. But now, because we've added in the people who make between $110 and $150 billion, it becomes, or $150,000, it becomes $80 billion. Buffaloed again, the Democrats. Hopefully they'll get this think tank together so that they can think a little more clearly. We talked last week about the situation with the FCC briefly. The FCC saying, well, it's no problem if monopolies happen, basically. In fact, there are some who are suggesting, the Heritage Foundation, for one, the right-wing think tank, the extreme right-wing think tank, suggesting that the FCC should get out of the business of regulating the airwaves and newspapers and radio and television altogether. You let the big fish eat the little fish until there's nothing left but big fish, and then let the big fish eat each other until there's nothing left but one giant fish. This is what Adam Smith warned about. So now we have, in today's USA Today, refusal to air ads criticized. Comcast is a cable television provider that competes for internet connections. They've got you can get a high-speed digital internet connection through your cable provider, through Comcast. And they compete with a local phone company called Quest Communications. And Quest wanted to run ads for their DSL service, which you can get over the telephone line. And they produced these ads, and they took them to Comcast and said, here, run these ads on your TV network. And Quest and Comcast says, no, we're not going to run an ad for a competing product.
even though it's a telephone company competing with a cable company for internet service. So how does this serve the public good? There really is, you know, what is the state of democracy? Our question for this hour. What is the state of democracy? It's limping along, it seems. There actually is a role. The quote that I shared with you yesterday from Thomas Jefferson about how if a market can't self-regulate, then it's appropriate for a government to step into that market and ensure that democracy is served. Here we have... Now, this one, you could look at this in several different ways. On the one hand, you could say, okay, if health services are provided by the government, then we are at the mercy of the government. Now, of course, my experience in having my health care provided by a private insurance company is that I'm at the mercy of the private insurance company, and it hasn't been a pretty thing. But the Bush administration, it's kind of a pox on both their houses, but the difference is that I can't vote for the people who run my health insurance company. And I can vote for who's going to run the United States. So if they screw up badly enough, we can throw the bums out. The Bush administration, this is from The Hill yesterday. The Bush administration, this is a publication for people in Washington, D.C. This is kind of the political insider's publication. Everybody in the Senate and the House of Representatives reads this thing. The Bush administration has rejected demands from Congress and its own advisory panel that it broaden Medicare coverage on an advanced heart pacemaker of the type used by Vice President Dick Cheney. So what happened was, in 2001, Dick Cheney needed a heart pacemaker. The Hill in their report suggests that 1.5 million people in America need this same kind of device and don't have it. He needed a pacemaker. He goes in. He gets it installed. It's paid for with tax dollars. Because members of Congress and members of the administration have a very generous form of what they would call socialized medicine. Works real well for them. And he gets this thing put in. It costs $30,000. And so then the Medicare panel, an advisory panel of the Congress and of the White House goes to the Congress and says, Medicare should pay for these things because there's 1.5 million people who need them. And Congress was ready to say, sure, no problem. And the Bush administration says, nope, Dick Cheney can have one, but poor people cannot. Lynn in Cupertino, California has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Thanks for the call, Lynn. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Oh, she dropped. She's not on the phone any longer. Sorry about that. You can try calling back. 1-800-TALK-YES. Ashcroft seeks more power to pursue terror suspects. This is the last thing that I wanted to get into in this hour, and we've touched on this in the past. I've got some more information for you. We had talked about Patriot 2. What's coming down the line? Well, the other shoe dropped yesterday. John Ashcroft went before Congress, and in the face of an Inspector General report that said that 762 people had been arrested after 9/11, and none of them had anything to do with terrorism, but they were thrown in jail, denied due process. Perhaps the Justice Department had even engaged in criminal conduct. Robert C. Scott, Democrat of Virginia, suggested that the denial of the suspects' civil rights and evidence of physical assaults by the Justice Department employees may have risen to the level of criminal conduct. Nonetheless, John Ashcroft says, we want more power to do more of this kind of thing. Linda is back in Cupertino. Welcome, Linda, to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I'm glad I could get on.
Me too.
Information about corporations and how they are really running our world. This is a fact about corporations, that they really are the invisible, unelected, unaccountable private government. And
that's right.
When they have control, we do not. And that's a special interest versus public interest. And yeah. I often think that Americans vote the way they do because they think that they can get something for nothing. Well, they can't.
Yeah.
Everything has a price, and democracy has a price, and that is participation. We have to participate. By our failure to participate in politics for the last, 50 years, you know, where we have just, you know, elected people and relied on them to do our bidding, turned this whole government that we've got that is of, by, and for the people for the corporations.
Yeah, I agree, Linda. I think that there's a larger issue because a lot of us are involving ourselves. You know, people talk about everybody who doesn't vote, but 50 million people voted in the last election out of 100 million potential voters. And, yeah, so half of the people who could have voted didn't, but nonetheless, a lot of people actually voted. I think that the problem is larger than just that. I think that, you know, on the one hand, some people who aren't voting are actually voting by not voting. They're saying none of the above. That's not a ballot choice, so they just don't show up. But I think the larger issue is that corporations are able, because of these Supreme Court decisions that give them the rights of human beings, that give them access to the Bill of Rights, they have been able to use this enormous wealth and the power that comes with it to control, to overwhelm us by carpet bombing of advertising and promoting. You know, for example, when Clinton first proposed his health care agenda, almost 70% of Americans were enthusiastically in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the insurance industry had finished spending $300 million to convince us that it was dangerous, people were terrified of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they misrepresented the program. So I think that the problem is not, I don't think that we should be blaming the victims. I don't think that we should be beating ourselves up. I think we need to get corporate money out of politics, and we need to go back to the laws that we had in the United States from 1776 right up until the early part of the 20th century that said it's a felony for corporations to insert themselves in politics. They can't vote. They shouldn't be participating in politics.
That's right. And I was listening to an address by the famous Burmese democracy activist Aung San Suu Kyi yesterday on KPFA radio.
Who was just arrested.
She was just arrested, and we don't even know where she is right now, I think. And she said something that I wrote down. She said, democracy means pluralism. And what we don't have today in America is pluralism. We have a very tiny minority of people with great power and affluence forcing their will on the rest of us. And that's the old story, you know, the old story of wealth versus, you know, public. And what we've got to do is, yes, we have to remove laws that allow corporations to run our government and donate to it. But the only way to do that is to start voting in greater numbers against the Republican entrenched big business special interests.
And the Democratic entrenched big business special interests.
I mean,
there's a bunch of corrupt Democrats out there, too.
Yes, indeed. I'm threatening my Democratic friends in Santa Clara County here that I will not vote in 2004 unless they make some changes. And we need to invade the Democratic Party. We liberals and progressives invade it like the religious right invaded the Republican Party. Take it over.
Linda, you're singing my song. I wrote an article for Common Dreams about 3 months ago called How to Take Back America.
It
says that. Well, good. Thank you.
Yeah,
if we want to change America, register if you're not registered. Vote even if you've never voted.
Vote Democrat and kick Democrats when they, like I just sent a bunch of emails to my assembly people in Sacramento today about two stupid things that they did just this week. And if we did that, And I said, you know, I have a vote here. You cannot get elected without votes.
Right.
You can't get elected with dollars. So you better listen to me, because I won't give votes to you.
I think this is one of those Howard Beale moments in the history of the United States that's probably very similar to the populist revolution that happened at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, where people are basically standing up and saying, we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as Howard Beale did in the movie Network. And but this time they mean it.
Well, if we can get you on everybody's car radio, Tom, I think that the public would wake up. But right now they're being lulled into sleep by the big business media.
Well, thank you, Linda. I appreciate your kind comments, and we do need to spread the word. It's a matter of awakening people. I am convinced that Americans really do care about these issues, and if they just knew. I mean, people aren't even being given decent civics lessons in school. You know, they just don't know. Thank you, Linda and Cupertino, for your call. It's very much appreciated. So here we have John Ashcroft saying he wants more power under the Patriot Act. He wants this to be expanded. He wants to add a death penalty to it. I had gotten a semi-hysterical email a week or so ago, from somebody saying they're setting up a death camp in the United States. They're going to put an execution chamber in Guantanamo Bay. And I'm like, whoa, you know, this is like over the top. Is this conspiracy stuff? And then Ashcroft comes before Congress and says, yeah, we want the right to execute people for more of these things. And let's look back at the history behind this thing real quickly. In 1798, four laws were passed that collectively were called the Alien and Sedition Acts. And these were promoted by John and Abigail Adams. Abigail Adams was so upset about newspapers that criticized her husband. She called it abuse, deception, and falsehood. And Benjamin Bach published a newspaper in Massachusetts called the Aurora, and he ran an editorial calling John Adams old, querulous, bald, blind, crippled, toothless Adams. And Abigail responded by saying that this guy had the malice of Satan. So they passed this law with the help of John Adams that made saying such things a crime. And boom, this guy went off to jail. They put a whole bunch of newspaper publishers in jail for saying these things. And the Alien and Sedition Acts are back in the form of Patriot 2. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of we the transnational corporation. Stay with us. I'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Nice drive, Jim.
Ah, thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation for your free investor's kit and video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch when charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Be happy in every life. We have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Talk radio for the rest of us. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. In our last 3 or 4 minutes here, we have Greg in New Mexico and David in San Francisco. I've got some really cool stuff here about the Alien Sedition Act, which I will share with you next week. But I want to hear what Greg and David have to say. Greg, we just have a couple of minutes, if you can be brief. Welcome, Greg, in New Mexico.
Hi, Tom. Hey. I was thinking the Patriot Act is just a massive document, but it seemed to be off the presses and on every senator's desk. In a very short time after the 9/11 attacks,
right.
Doesn't most legislation take months or even years to get together? Was it that this was so conveniently ready to go?
Yeah, good question, Greg. And a lot of people have been asking that, and it's spawned a lot of conspiracy theories. My guess is, and I've heard this from folks in Washington, D.C., that what was presented was actually written back in 98 or 97 when the Tim McVeigh bombed the Oklahoma City building, and they did pass anti-terrorist legislation back then. It wasn't anything near as draconian as the Patriot Act, and that this was stuff that they had put together back then and tried to trot out, and it just didn't fly, and so they reinvented it very quickly. It was just a matter of a month or so after 9/11 that they brought this out. Greg,
yeah,
thanks for the call.
It went through so quickly, yep. No one had a chance to examine it.
Right. Yeah, I don't think our legislators even had a chance to read it, but it had been around for. I think the people promoting it had it in their back pockets for a couple of years. Greg, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. David in San Francisco, $40 trillion deficit. Welcome, David.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. I just wanted to find out if you had any new information about this $44 trillion deficit. As you may remember, what was it, like late Friday? They had some scandal going, and since Friday and Saturday are the slow news days, they slipped in that there's going to be a $44 trillion deficit. So
this was the projection of one of the president's economic council groups. I don't have it in front of me right now. We talked about it earlier in the week. And that projection was that these tax cuts in the aggregate, the last 3 years in aggregate, see, right now, if there had been no tax cuts, if Bush had not cut taxes in 2001, 2002, or now, we would have a balanced budget at this moment, and that these tax cuts over a period of time are going to end up with a $44 trillion debt. Thanks for the call, David. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, talk radio for the rest of us. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program.